Weeks later, Japan withdrew as host of the 1940 Olympics, and the Games were transferred to Finland. Adjusting his aspirations from Tokyo to Helsinki, Louis rolled on. He won every race he contested in the 1939 school season. In the early months of 1940, in a series of Eastern indoor miles against the best runners in America, he was magnificent, taking 2 seconds and two close fourths, twice beating Cunningham, and getting progressively faster. In February, at the Boston Garden, he ran a 4:08.2, 0.6 seconds short of the fastest indoor mile ever run. At Madison Square Garden, 2 weeks later, he scorched a 4:07.9, caught just before the tape by the great Chuck Fenske, whose time equaled the indoor world record. With the Olympics months away, Louis was peaking at the ideal moment. As Louis blazed through college, far away, history was turning. In Europe, Hitler was laying plans to conquer the continent. In Asia, Japan's leaders had designs of equal magnitude. Poor in natural resources, its trade crippled by high tariffs and low demand, Japan was struggling to support a growing population. Eyeing their nation's resource-rich neighbors, Japan's leaders saw the prospect of economic independence and something more. Central to the Japanese identity was the belief that it was Japan's divinely mandated right to rule its fellow Asians, whom it saw as inherently inferior. "There are superior and inferior races in the world," said the Japanese politician Nakajima Chikuei in 1940, "and it is the sacred duty of the leading race to lead and enlighten the inferior ones. The Japanese," he continued, "are the sole superior race of the world." Moved by necessity and destiny, Japan's leaders planned to plant the blood of the Yamato, Japanese, race on their neighboring nation's soil. They were going to subjugate all of the Far East. Japan's military-dominated government had long been preparing for its quest. Over decades, it had crafted a muscular, technologically sophisticated army and navy, and through a military-run school system that relentlessly and violently drilled children on the nation's imperial destiny, it had shaped its people for war. Finally, through intense indoctrination, beatings, and desensitization, its army cultivated and celebrated extreme brutality in its soldiers. "Imbuing violence with holy meaning," wrote the historian Iris Chang, "the Japanese Imperial Army made violence a cultural imperative, every bit as powerful as that which propelled Europeans during the Crusades and the Spanish Inquisition." Chang cited a 1933 speech by a Japanese general: "Every single bullet must be charged with the imperial way, and the end of every bayonet must have national virtue burnt into it." In 1931, Japan tested the waters, invading the Chinese province of Manchuria and setting up a fiercely oppressive puppet state. This was only the beginning. In the late 1930s, both Germany and Japan were ready to move. It was Japan that struck first, in 1937, sending its armies smashing into the rest of China. 2 years later, Hitler invaded Poland. America, long isolationist, found itself pulled into both conflicts. In Europe, its allies lay in Hitler's path. In the Pacific, its longtime ally China was being ravaged by the Japanese, and its territories of Hawaii, Wake, Guam, and Midway, as well as its Commonwealth of the Philippines, were threatened. The world was falling into catastrophe. On a dark day in April 1940, Louis returned to his bungalow to find the USC campus buzzing. Hitler had unleashed his blitzkrieg across Europe, his Soviet allies had followed, and the continent had exploded into total war. Finland, which was set to host the Summer Games, was reeling. Helsinki's Olympic Stadium was partially collapsed, toppled by Soviet bombs. Gunnar Hukert, who had beaten Louis and won gold for Finland in the 5,000 in Berlin, was dead, killed defending his homeland. The Olympics had been canceled.